listening to another Netcast production brought to you by the Fancy Pants Gangsters at fancypantsgangsters.com. Because those who can, do. Those who cannot, do it on the internet.
Hey, this is Sammy from the Fourth Rights.
Hey, we're Chester Bay.
We're John Wayne and the Pain.
Hi, this is your boss, smooth gal, Maddie Ruthless.
Hi, we're the Drop Steppers.
Yo, this is Keith Django, and you're listening to the Flyover Sky Show.
Flyover Sky Show.
Flyover Sky Show.
Flyover Sky Show.
Flyover Sky Show. At Fancy Pants Gangsters.
Fancy Pants Gangsters.
Fancy Pants Gangsters.
FancyPantsGangsters.com. Yo, what's up with the Fancy Pants?
Everybody, it's the Flyover Ska Show. I am your host, Courtney Close, as always, and we're brought to you by MN Ska, Minnesota's Ska community at mnska.com, and we're also brought to you via the podcast network Fancy Pants Gangsters, and they're cleverly at fancypantsgangsters.com. I'm sitting in my living room with noted guitarist, musician, man of many talents, Mr. Jay Kalk. Jay, thanks for coming.
Thank you, Courtney. It's a pleasure being here today.
Now I say many talents, many things. You've been in many, many bands, and currently you guys have rejoined forces in the band 3 Minute Hero here in Minneapolis. And what we're going to do is we'll talk about some of the reunion shows and some of the stuff you got coming up. But what I'd really like to do today, I kind of want to go back in a time machine, go back and travel the path that you've kind of forged for yourself. Where did it all begin for you as far as like music is concerned? How did you get into it and that sort of thing?
All right, from the beginning.
Yeah, I'll just go right from the beginning.
Okay. All right, buddy. Well, when I was a young lad, you know, I'm a farm boy from a small community, New Ulm, Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Shell's
sure,
beer.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what I was weaned on as a small suppling lad.
It's mother's milk, isn't it?
Mother's milk. Yeah, it was very nice. I was a young kid. Went to a little Lutheran school, so the Lutherans like to sing. So I was singing ever since I was 5. I hit puberty pretty early. I was, I think, about 11 years old, but and my voice is low and like this, and everybody's also singing like this, and so my teacher would always yell at me, "Go up the octave, kid." So I was always singing and always loved that. 13, I baled enough hay and picked enough rock in all my neighbors' houses or in my neighbors' fields to buy my first guitar.
Nice.
So 13, and from there I was just self-teaching myself. And learning a little bit more about the guitar. I really sucked at the very beginning. I truly did. I had a band in high school. We played 4 shows in 4 years.
What kind of band was it?
Oh, man. We were awful. Something awful. But we had a lot of fun and learned a lot. I think we were like a little bit of, you know, rock and roll and a little bit of punk rock.
Like, what time period are we talking
about?
This
would be, you know, probably we probably play all 4 of our shows in like 92, mm-hmm. 93. 93, I graduated from high school.
Mm-hmm.
From there, went off to college and didn't do anything my freshman year, but my sophomore year, I got the first 3 Minute Hero together.
Mm.
Now, I'm the only surviving member of the first 3 Minute Hero.
Really?
Yes. We had, it was just a group of okay, like, hipster musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And we played pretty good. I think we had 3 shows, had some fun. But the summer came and, you know, the band broke up because we were going to school in Moorhead.
Sure.
That's where I went to college.
Yeah, and out on the western side.
On the western side, on the northwestern side.
Yeah.
And, I wanted to get the band back together, but I wanted to choose the musicians this time because I really kind of wanted to bump up the musicianship.
Mm-hmm.
So I had one of my good friends I went to grade school with. He was going to go to school with me. His name was Jason Hoffman. He played bass. And Jeff Nelson, he was kind of in the first 3 Minute Hero. He never made any of the gigs, but He made it into the second incarnation of 3 Minute Hero as a trombone player. He wasn't even singing yet. And some various other places. Bryce Bliley of Secondhand Ska Kings, he
sure.
was in the in that Three Minute Hero, the second generation of Three Minute Hero. We had some other players, and we played around, got very popular in college, did a CD. The CD went really, really well, and the guys that recorded our CD said, hey, you should quit college and hit the road. And now we were, I was going to go in my senior year, and I was like, are you kidding? Leave college? And then the rest of the guys were like, oh, my God, leave college. We never even thought about it.
Right.
But then we start thinking about it more. You're like, we got a window of opportunity. This was in 96, 97.
Sure.
Ska was still cool,
yeah.
You know, and that in the 90s anyway. This yeah. Is before Real Big Fish had the hit that kind of crumbled it all down. So it was kind of big, and, you know, like people, the whole ska thing was getting huge. And we were like, we're definitely the only guys in the area doing it. Up there, anyway.
Definitely. Yeah, there's not a whole lot up there.
There's not a whole lot up there. You know, it was Fargo-Moorhead has a pretty decent college scene. You have three major colleges there. So
right.
As a kid, as a college kid, I thought it was pretty dope just to be up there. Anywho's, we quit college, and a couple guys didn't. That's when we got Jonathan Tabeast on the drums.
Sure.
He said, I don't want to go to college. I just want to play drums. So he got on. Our trombone player didn't want to go, and that's when... Jeff was courting Eric Johnson. Eric, they went to school together back in high school. He knew he was a pretty top-notch trombone player, and he was playing with Suspect Bill, but we knew he was hungry.
Right.
He was hungry, and he was going to college, but he was more hungry to tour. And that's what we wanted. We wanted kids that were only going to tour.
Right.
Because that's it. Some of us consolidated, lived in the same room, and we won a bus at a battle of the bands that they gave us a custom paint job. Back in the day, we had our own Three-Minute Hero bus. It was pretty gnarly.
Like, if you've ever played Rock Band, and, you know, like, you go through these different stages and gigs, and it's like, you've won this many fans, and you've won a bus, tour bus. Now you can start touring. It's like, that sounds like what Three-Minute Hero did.
it was gradual. It was on a gradient scale like that. You know, we started small, and it got big real quick for us, and... We won things, and then we're like, okay, we're going to give you a record deal. It was a small mom-and-pop record deal, but it was still a record deal. But they said, you got to tour and support this album. Always, we can't make our money. You guys can't make any money. And you can't gain any fans by playing once a month. So we're like, yeah, of course. So we hit the road. We got a nice cast of dudes that really wanted to play, and it was on. It was macaroni and cheese, no milk. It was ramen every day. It was tuna sandwiches that we kept in the bus. And we toured hard for those that would let us be there. You know, we'd play for like $100 in some far off town, and then just beg people to sleep at their homes. And we did that for a solid year. You know, probably our first year out there, we probably scored about 100 gigs. It wasn't too bad, that's as many as we can get. We had a booking agent that would set us out to Wisconsin, and we'd get a gig on a Tuesday, and our next gig would be on a Saturday. So it wasn't feasible to play that gig and come all the way back to Fargo.
Right.
And then get back all the way. So we had to like sit and beg for gigs, sleep in our van and sleep in the bus in sub-zero temperatures, curling next to each other, like shivering. Oh, man. It was fun. You know, we were young and it was dumb and we had a lot. It was a lot of fun. But from there, we did our second album, which was called Everyday Ninjas. That was probably our most solid album. It was full on studio, the whole thing, very tightly honed. Our band has been touring for a solid year and some change, and
that's
we
gotta
are tight.
Help. Yeah, that helps with songwriting execution and recording. I mean, if you guys have been touring and playing gigs constantly, you said 100 gigs in that year, it's like all of a sudden going into the studio, it's the problems you had before recording, I'm sure you didn't have this coming in this time. You guys had the screws all tightened up.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah,
there's no hesitance. We were just balls of the wall by this time. I'm like, well, we know these songs.
Right.
We've tested them on the road. We know the fans like them. They're danceable.
Right.
You know, all the other songs that were in between, they're out the door. It's nice. You know, as a band, we're done. Oh, we're just going to write an album. No, we tried these songs out, and it was a solid, solid album. Had a lot of fun with it and kept on touring. About this time, we moved down to Minneapolis. We're getting bigger down here. We had a house gig over at Bunkers. I think we were playing every Tuesday.
Nice.
And things were starting to get big for us real fast in this area.
Well, it's the logical next step. I mean, it's the biggest city near Fargo-Moorhead area. I mean, and it's a rich music scene, rich music history here. So it's like, It seems like a no-brainer.
No-brainer. We all wanted to anyway, you know.
Sure.
We were like the big fish in that scene already. We were drawing more than any other bands, and we were young and having fun. And we're like, okay, let's go down to Minneapolis and see what we can do with this scene now. And so we moved down here, and we started, and, you know, we just continued to tour and doing more strategic gigs in Minneapolis, bumping up to bigger venues,
right,
drawing more and more people, and still touring out the five-state area. We did one long tour out to Arizona. Oh, sorry, we did two tours. We did one out to Philadelphia.
Mm.
We played with some ska bands out there, some big ska festival. Ska Vuvie and the Epitones, I think we played with out there.
Nice.
And then we went down to Arizona, and then Warsaw kind of helped hook that tour up.
Right.
Because that was kind of their backyard.
Yeah, they're down in that southwest area.
Yeah, Calazonia.
Calazonia.
That's their area. So they kind of showed us the ropes when it came to touring the southwest. And then, you know, we just did the five-state area and became more and more popular. We got rid of that record label because we wanted to record with somebody else, and we wanted to record on tape,
right,
instead of digital. And so we found a producer, and he did that album. And so it's half studio and half live album. That would be our last album, called Operation Brown Star.
Mm-hmm.
And that album did really well. Got some really great sounding stuff. This guy was a great engineer, and I mean, it sounds as good as anything off the radio.
And that was what really, I mean, that's what introduced me to 3 Minute Hero. My buddy Ryan, he was like, oh yeah, 3 Minute Hero, you got to check these guys out. And like, that was the CD that got passed around.
Oh,
you
cool.
Know? So that was my indoctrination. It was like half live, yeah. And I enjoyed both the live stuff and the recorded stuff. And I mean, being a horn player, I'm pretty biased towards
exactly
music with tons of horns and stuff.
Lots of horns in 3 Minute Hero. Yeah. You know, we have a 4-piece horn section. We've got a berry, 2 trombones, and a trumpet.
Yeah.
And that's been our trombone, or that's been our horn lineup for years.
Mm-hmm.
And what I love about the 3 Minute Hero horns, it's not just about playing. These guys were all in marching band, so they are all marching band geeks. So these guys have sharp choreography.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, one guy swinging a horn over another guy, ducking, doing dance moves, coming up with great horn lines, and then busting right out into some kind of a choreographed dance move on top of it.
Well, that's what I liked about. I've seen 3 Minute Hero a couple of times. In fact, we opened for you guys a couple years ago at the Fine Line in Minneapolis, and that's one thing that like really sticks out is the showmanship. It's not just, you know, we're standing, we're playing, we're, you know, this really great music and this fun music. I mean, you guys look like you're having a ton of fun on stage, and I mean, like, the whole thing is like a production. You've got outfits, you've got lights, and you've got all this stuff. Like, where did that come from? I mean, did you guys make a conscious decision, like, okay, we're going to take this, you know, to the nth degree, or was this something that just kind of happened?
Well, we've always been over the top. Always. And lots of hams in this band. And
definitely.
Which makes it really fun. This is my first big band I've ever played in, and I will say it, and I said it before, I'll say it again, that this is my favorite band I've ever played in. And, we, you know, we're all really good friends. We had a real strong product we were putting down. The musicianship was really cool. And on top of that, it was just a show that just blew people's minds.
Mm.
People were just like, I can't believe what's happening. And I'm like, we're a ska show. Like, we, you know, definitely based on ska, you know, but we're taking it different directions. But our root was ska. You know?
Right, right.
So, you know, the ska thing, suits. Okay, we wore suits, but we wore colorful suits. You know, we just kind of took it to another degree, you know.
Yeah, I'm like, it's like suits, like they were designed by the, I don't know, the costume director from the movie The Mask or something.
Yeah,
you know, it's like,
solid.
I mean, it's like totally like way in your face, over the top. And I mean, that's what I like about it. It's... You know, a lot of people sometimes say, well, ska is really, you know, cheeky or dorky or whatever. But it's like, you guys go, we know it is. And guess what? We are wearing that shit on our sleeve. You know, like, we're owning it. And
oh, yeah.
That is what makes, I mean, it cuts the tension. It makes it way more enjoyable. And you go, oh, okay, I can enjoy these guys and not feel like a fool. Everyone's having a great time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
we cross those cool boundaries.
Yeah, you're not afraid to transcend cool.
Yeah, we always said we got the greatest nerdiest audience ever, you know, and we were proud of it, and the audience was proud of it, and we're like, yeah, of course, you know, we're all nerds, I guess, mm-hmm. you know, doing our thing.
Right.
You know, the whole lights and the whole production, the big show of it. Jonathan Tabis was a huge Kiss fan, so we made a big 3-minute hero sign, all a Kiss, and it looks fantastic. You're sitting in the audience, and you look up, and there's this huge 3MH sign that blinks behind the drummer.
Yeah.
A lot of the over-the-topness comes from our lead singer, Jeff Nelson, who's this brilliant lyricist and one of the most unbelievable frontmen I've ever had the pleasure playing with.
He's got a great personality for a frontman, especially for a band like yours. And he seems kind of like, I mean, he's eccentric enough for the genre of music. He just seems like this mad scientist up there. And you can't help but just, you know, like, just go along with whatever crazy antics he seems to, you know, come up with. And I mean, it shows in his lyrics and it shows in his like performance. It's just, I mean, it's a fun time.
His command over the audience is exceptional.
Yeah. I mean, he has to be some sort of theater major or something.
He's a creative writer and a visual artist.
Hmm.
And, you know, a trombone player forever and never was a singer.
Right.
But he just kind of fell into it. This kind of Danny Elfman meets Circus Barker kind of guy. He's out there.
Absolutely, yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the night, we do this mad ska swing number, fast as swing could go.
Mm-hmm.
And then it breaks down to a really crazy halftime where it's he kind of commands the audience, like throws like a magical spell over everyone. Says, all right, everybody put your arms around each other and kick like a kick line.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look out in that audience, every person in that club is in that kick line. I've never seen anybody command an audience to do something, and every one of them does that one thing.
Exactly.
And you look at, even in the back, he's like, all of a sudden he's like, you in the back. And he's like, all right.
Yeah.
The guy in the back will do it. And everybody will do this kick line, and like, you kick to remember, you kick to forget. And it's like, it's super powerful. And then, you know, it speeds up and blasts right off, and then all the whole place is skanking and losing their mind, and this is at the very end of the show, and I'm like, this is when people should be exhausted.
Right. Well, and if I recall, the last time I played with you guys at the Fine Line, the show didn't wrap up until like 2 in the morning, and it was like a Sunday. And I just remember going, oh, I love this band, but oh my God, I'm dragging ass. There's no way I'm going to make it to work tomorrow.
Oh, my God. That was I think that was in 2009, or was that 2000? Yeah, that was 2009.
Yeah,
we had two reunion shows, one in 2007 and one in 2009.
Yeah, you guys seem to do like this every other year sort of thing for the past few.
I mean, our last show was in 2000, and then we, you know, guys had families. Jonathan and I started, we did a lot of touring,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, some of the other guys kind of did their thing, went to school or whatever. But then 2007 came along, they're like, we should do a reunion, and I think Jonathan had a birthday, and he really wanted to get the band together, and I was living out in Hawaii at the time,
mm-hmm.
and I flew in, and we got the band together, and I just left so happy. It was just good to be with my old friends again, making music. Did again in 2009, that's where, you know, I caught up with you.
Yeah.
And that's that Thursday. We still drew 300-some on a Sunday.
Yeah.
At the Fine Line. It was amazing. I couldn't believe it. We were a band that's been almost dead for 10 years and still drew 300 people on a Sunday night. And I
was amazed.
I was amazed.
Oh, it was one of those things where it's like, yes, we're opening for 3-Minute Hero. This is like, it was one of those things where it's like the people that were in our band had been fans when they were in high school. And, you know, we were all really excited, but we're like, oh man, it's on a Sunday night. Who's going to show up? But it's like, well, it turns out lots of people will show up. It's like, all you need to do is just throw a show every 2 years, and like tons of people come out of the woodwork.
Right.
You know, and when you guys came back in 2007, I remember that was a huge like year for ska music randomly, because it was, you had all these bands that were popular kind of mid and late 90s coming out with albums. I think Mustard Plug put out an album. Buck 09 came out of nowhere, put out an album. I'm trying to go down the line, but like, it just, there were like all these probably Real Big Fish came out with an album. So, you know, like all these bands like that, all of a sudden it's like, hey, I think it might be cool to put out albums now or to reform or like to get back together. And so it was like, it was kind of cool that like you guys kind of did that at around the same time as well.
It's a weird ska convergence.
Yeah, but it's strange. It's like, why? Like, I guess it was always kind of there, but all of a sudden it's like, you know, people are peeking out going, oh, I guess it's safe again, you know, like
like are people emo, super emo, bummed out again because yeah, we'll come in and save the day.
Yeah, emo music is kind of on the downswings or downslow, so it's like we'll just come in and brighten up everyone's day here.
Well, Courtney, before we get too far into the history, I want to say upcoming in June, mm-hmm. June 17th at Bunker's 3 Minute Hero is playing a show. Now, this is not a reunion anymore, Courtney.
Now, this is official. You're coming out right now on this program and this saying that this is not a one time and we're going away for a couple years.
That's right, Courtney. I'm releasing it here right on your show, buddy.
Very good,
good. Yeah, this is it. This has been in the works for a few years. We've been talking about this, that we wanted to get back together and give it a go. Mm. So this is going to be our relaunch to let people know what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
3 Minute Hero is back to stay, and a little later in the program, I will tell you more about the future of what we have planned. But this June 17th at Bunker's on Washington Avenue
mm-hmm.
in Minneapolis, you will see 3 Minute Hero and Blue Waffle.
Oh, nice. Yeah. For those who don't know and who are in the Twin Cities area, Blue Waffle, a group of teachers, they're music teachers. They work at the School of Rock. They decided that, hey, remember all those cool 3 Minute Hero shows or those cool like third wave ska shows we used to go and have a lot of fun? It's like, why can't we have fun and, you know, again? Why can't we make it again? So they got together and formed, and it's Shane, and this is, so it's like, my friends grew up in high school listening to 3 Minute Hero. I grew up in high school listening to Helva, and these guys are from you know, St. Paul, Minneapolis area, and they were amazing. And so it was like, I'm pumped that Blue Waffle is kind of doing their thing, and I'm glad that you guys got them on the bill for the June 17th show at Bunker's.
I'm excited too. I haven't seen them yet, but I've heard a lot of good reports.
Yeah, their thing is they wrote a bunch of cool third wave styled songs. Basically, it's the style of music like that's what kind of hooked me into ska in general, and then they sprinkled in a bunch of two-tone covers just to cover their bases, you know, hedge their bets.
Love it.
It's very cool.
Love it.
So you guys are, that's a Saturday, and what are the details for that? Like, what time you guys?
It's going to be a standard night gig, 21 plus, Blue Waffle go on at 9:30,
mm-hmm.
and then we're going to finish out the night. It's going to be just our only two bands. I believe cover is $8, so it's pretty cheap.
Nice. Yeah, I love the shows that are $10 or under. I
mean, yeah, 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 totally. It's totally reasonable.
Yeah.
It's totally reasonable. So, yeah, back to the history. 3 Minute Hero, that's when we had the third album, Operation Brown Star. That was kicking for us.
Mm-hmm.
At about that time, you know, we were starting to wind down, and a few of the guys were trying to get family started, getting married, and they wanted to slow down the band.
Right.
There's a handful of us, myself included, I know Jonathan, that were hell-bent on on touring every single day. You know, it was our super dream.
Yeah.
So it kind of drove the band apart. We were still all really good friends, but our visions kind of changed after a while. And it was unfortunate. So in October of 2000, the band's, that was our last show, and it was at the Fine Line. And it was probably our biggest show we've ever played that was just us. Mm-hmm. And we've opened for Styx and Hootie and the Blowfish and weird bands like that.
Right.
But, you know, I had festivals and there was 10,000 people there, which was a lot of fun to see a sea of people.
Mm-hmm.
But this was our show. We drew 700 people at the Fine Line.
Where'd you pack them all?
I don't know. It was way over capacity.
Yeah.
But the place was sweltering, and it was fun, and it was sad and exciting all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So the band ended there, and that's when Jonathan moved out to New York, and he joined the band Rasputina,
mm-hmm.
The cello, kind of gothic cello band.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a lot of touring with them, and he went international with those guys. I moved out to California, and then I joined the band Warsaw. the okay. Poland Brothers.
Yeah. So why don't you explain for like for those who haven't or aren't familiar with Warsaw, kind of explain to our listeners what they were all about.
All right. Warsaw's been around since, I believe, 94, maybe even a little bit earlier. Their first album had, you know, some reggae, some weird heavy metal on it. But their albums, I think they have like maybe 13 albums out right now. They have a ton of albums. They've been around forever.
Yeah.
But their second and third album, their most notably their third album called Battle Ska Galactica, came out in 97. And it was a heavy hitting ska album. Sold many, many copies all around the States and some abroad. Some of the best horn playing I've ever heard in my life. Some well-crafted songs, you know, good ska, good two-tone, a little bit of roots. Covering all the some great third wave. Excellent songwriting. Some of it's very cocky. Some of it's very sexual. You know, kind of pulled you in a lot of different ways than, like, I remember the Three Minute Heroes was kind of like a nerdy thing, you know?
Yeah.
We had fun being nerdy, and then the Warsaw thing was a little bit more edgy and a little bit more... A little more sexual, a little more punk in your face, and it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
They had probably a good two or three albums that were just strictly ska. So they kind of became big in that era when ska was really big, and they had a couple heavy hitting ska albums. So they were labeled a ska band, even though they went a lot of different directions.
Right, they had a lot more tools in their belt than
they
that,
sure
than
did. That. I mean, these guys were pretty competent musicians and. And it was a cool challenge for me, too. And I was a musician from the start. And, mm-hmm. like, I like to play ska, but I really love ska. It's definitely one of my favorites to play. But, I like to play a lot of different kind of stuff, you know, and expand my roots and expand my music out there.
Right. Well, and being a musician myself, it's like you kind of need to be pulled in other directions to make sure that you can progress in any one of those directions, you know. You get stale on one style for a while, so it's nice to switch things up a little bit.
And ska is not one genre. If you ever listen to ska, I mean, ska could be influenced by many, numerous, different
many colors of that rainbow, indeed. Not just black and white.
And even the guys that created it's the Skatalites.
Yeah,
and, you know, if anybody really wants to get judgmental, like, oh, that ain't ska. I mean, you got to listen to the Skatalites. Those guys took Latin influences, and ska is influenced by just ska itself is influenced by boogie woogie and.
Oh,
African
yeah.
beats.
Exactly.
It's
it's
brainchild.
Calypso Mento, but also, yeah, like the R&B from the States and like soul music and all this stuff like kind of got thrown into like the ska melting pot to create it.
Yeah, and
so.
It created it.
Yeah.
And Lloyd Nibbs created the beat.
Yep.
Yeah, and Ernest Rangley. Ernest Rangley got the guitar and put the ska to it, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, and that songwriting continues today, you know? And here we are in a... You know, post third wave, maybe even getting close to fourth wave, fabled fourth wave. if it's here or if it's coming, it's, you know, some people have been trying to label it, but who knows?
History will judge, I guess.
History will judge. And, well, I joined this Warsaw band. I moved out to California and I showed up on their doorstep. I told them about 2 months beforehand, I'm like, I'm moving to California to join your band. They're like, all right, man, whatever.
Yeah.
But they didn't know that I was serious. So I moved with my best friend. Chet, and we moved out to California, and I said, okay, man, I'm here. They're like, oh, we don't need you, dude. And I'm like, well, okay, now what do I do? Well, I'm in LA. I might as well start doing whatever. So I, you know, try to pick up little jobs here and there and try to play some music and try to work in the industry a little bit. But it wasn't more than a month later they called me up and said, our bass player quit. We need you to grab a bass guitar, learn how to play bass for Warsaw.
Sure.
And in 3 weeks, we're picking you up in the van. And I said, okay. So I had all my guitar gear down there, and I was delivering pizzas, and some kid had a really nice bass, and he's like, man, I wish I had a Mesa Boogie guitar half stack. And I said, well, I have one. You want to trade it up for this bass? And he said, yeah, let's do it. So I got my bass right then, and I just started woodshedding like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably spent about a week on the road with their bass player that was quitting. And then from there on out, for the next 4 years... I was Warsaw's bass player.
Now, Warsaw, they tour, like, all the time. Like, basically, constantly. There's hardly any breaks in there.
Yeah.
And that was kind of what you were looking for, right? You were looking for that tour all the time sort of thing.
There's a couple things I really meant to learn for myself through Warsaw. You know, Three Minute Hero was a lot of fun, but it was very democratic.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of sick of democracy in a band because, you know, somebody would like, oh, I don't want to play this show. And if one person says, I don't want to play a show, that means the whole band can't play a show.
Right.
Because one person decided to, you know, do that. Where I saw it when I would look at Warsaw, if some guy would say, oh, I don't want to play a show. Fine, give me those drumsticks. I'll play drums. And then the kid would be like, oh, no, wait a minute. I want to play. You know what I'm saying? And so you kind of take that power away of, you know, don't pander to everybody's needs because you have a goal. And if your goal gets mixed in with a lot of other people's goals, mm-hmm. you know, you got to, if your goal is very strong, you're going to go for it no matter what.
Right.
And I needed to learn that, and that's what I learned with these guys. I mean, these guys were very much ruthless pirates. They were road pirates.
They do seem a lot like pirates. I saw them open for Secondhand Ska Kings at Lee's Liquor Lounge, and boy, it was one of those shows where it's like, I mean, these guys came in off the road, and they seemed like they were drunk already, and then they like were like wasted, but then they came in, they played this kick-ass music, and it was flawless, and their horns sounded great, and there's all this stuff, and I was like, wow. I'm like, how are they able to do that? look like they can hardly walk.
Oh, my God. I mean, I think even the older brother, there's the Poland brothers, there's two brothers, right? They got Aaron and Chris. Chris is the older brother. And he wrote this one song called Bow Down, and it's about a tour that they did. They called it, I forgot what it was, a Southwest tour. They had Dave's Big Deluxe and Congo Shock, which were 90s bands out of Arizona. Well, they did this big ska tour together, I don't know, maybe 12 dates. But, you know, it was kind of like they wanted to establish a pecking order, you know, like who's the king band, you know, and everybody's really kind of jockeying for position. So he wrote a whole song about, and it's like a pirate song. It's all about bow down. So he puts all this pirate slang into, like, how we're on the road and, like, mm-hmm. come on, brave boys, we sink or swim. And when the sun comes up, a few men throw up, and we start it all over again. You know, it's just like, these guys are true pirates. You know,
right,
they're just
right.
out there just like getting money from bar owners and play gigs and just playing this massive ska for, you know, massive ska audiences.
It's hard to keep that that fire lit for that long. I mean, they've been around for a long
forever.
Time.
They still tour.
Yeah.
The fun part about it is I still tour with them 2-3 times a year, only in Hawaii.
Ah.
So we get together. It's kind of like an all-star of Warsaw. We all fly out to Hawaii, and we play 2 weeks of gigs and have fun, you know, surf and do our thing on Hawaii. And then I get to come back to Minnesota, where the land that I love. And
it is so strange. You know, so, I mean, you spent a lot of time of your life in Minnesota and in Hawaii. I mean, you couldn't get two more different places.
Indeed.
How did you end up out in Hawaii?
So I did Warsaw for about 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I got pretty burnt out. You know, I think I did 1,000 gigs with them in about 4 years, 1,000 or so. And then I was pretty frazzled, and then I got off the road. I lived in Arizona to cool down a little bit. And in Arizona, I got together with this lady, Sarah McAllister, and she's got this wonderful voice, and she plays ska music. She's got like a Billie Holiday meets the Skatalites.
Nice.
And she was an old friend from before, but she just never had enough courage to get out there and start playing. And, you know, I was fresh off of playing almost every day of my life, and then all of a sudden I was...
Not playing.
I'm not playing. So I was hitting open mics maybe 5 nights a week, just so I can get out to a bar, have a beer, and put the guitar in my hand, so I felt a little normal.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, "Girl, if you really want to get out there, let's do this." And my first day I moved to Arizona, she had a gig, and it was like an all-age kiddie ska show, and she was so nervous. And there's maybe about 50 kids there.
Sure.
And I'm like, why are you nervous? This is, you know, these kids want to hear ska, and they're stoked that somebody's playing. And it was me. I was playing an acoustic guitar, and she was playing a nylon string and singing ska. And she's got an amazing voice. Amazing. Mm-hmm. And she was all nervous. She's like, make me a drink. And, you know, it's like, oh, my God, give me some pills. And I was like, geez, girl, just chill out. And I'm like, okay, from now on, we're going to hit every open mic we can, and we're going to wring this out of you. And so we did. Played open mics almost every night until she relaxed. Mm-hmm. She's like, all of a sudden, she was like, I can't wait to play the next show. I'm like, that's the right attitude.
Exactly.
So it was time to record an album. She wanted to record an album. Her mom funded it. I said, okay, let's do this, and I'm going to start my own record label. It's called Jader Records. And that's the kind of nickname I acquired when I moved out to California when I was touring with Warsaw. My name was, Jay Kalk, but I'm a Minnesota dude through and through. So my Minnesota accent was still wonderful and rich.
Yes.
When I was out in California, and Californians love to rip on us Midwestern accents.
You turn a lot of heads when you order up at the deli. It's like, who is that? Where is he from?
Okay, we got a Midwesterner.
Yeah.
So, and of course, we always go, oh, hey there. Oh, hey there.
Hey there.
Oh, hey there, Courtney. And then I think Monkey Bone in Warsaw said, oh, Jader. Oh, Jader. And it just caught on. All of a sudden, I was Jader. And, we go to Boise, Idaho, and they're like, oh, this is our new bass player, Jader. And all the girls will be like, oh, Jader. And all of a sudden, I'm Jader. I'm Jader. And, I kind of dug the nickname, too. So mm-hmm. I still keep it by that. Some people only know me that name. And so I created Jader Records, knowing that I'm going to be recording music for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I figure that if I'm going to record music, I should just put them all in one family. Everybody that I play music with, I'm just going to put them on Jader Records. And then I'm going to have this huge catalog of my musical family.
Makes sense.
Makes
yeah.
sense. I'm not the kind of guy that puts out an album and then quits and
right.
goes to a day job. I'm a musician for life, and I've already proved it.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a great album together. I got one of Warsaw's old drummers. His name's Cameron, unbelievable drummer. And I had Militant Madman Mike Madsen. He used to play in the Mad Caddies.
Oh, wow.
To play trumpet. And then I had Monkey Bone, the trombone player for Warsaw. So this album is like an all-star ska album. I'm going to have to give you a copy because
yeah.
I think you would love it. And
sounds awesome.
All the girls out there would love it because it's a girl ska album.
Right.
She sings, and there's not a lot of girl ska albums
female
out there.
Female-fronted ska, I mean, like that. I mean, it's hard to come by, but there are a lot of bands, though, that have done it really well, and for anyone from Save Ferris to No Doubt, and those are the predominant ones, and in fact, it's cool that you guys are playing with Blue Waffle, because they are female-fronted, and that's
I can't wait
cool.
to hear.
Yeah, yeah, it's very, very, very cool, but, so it's always been, that was kind of some of the music I was listening to in, middle school, high school, where I was like, oh, this is so cool, and it was for whatever reason, it ups the attractive level. If you love ska and you're playing ska and you're singing and you're a front woman, it's like, ooh, all right.
Yeah,
you just went from a 6 to an 8.
Right? In a hurry.
Yeah.
I was going to say, seeing a bunch of dudes on stage is okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But having a woman on stage is just the next level. It's so much more fun.
Right.
Well, that group was really good, and we played a few gigs and we sold a few albums and had a lot of fun with that. I joined a kind of electro pop band because they were buddies of mine. I lived at their house and they needed a bass player, and I joined their band, and that was a lot of fun too. It was a whole other kind of realm of music I've never really played before.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I don't know anything about that genre.
No, it was a band called Army of Robots, and these guys are really talented. I really enjoyed playing with them. I mean, a lot of the stuff was sequenced, so the drummer had to wear headphones and play with that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a whole new realm. I never really played that before. That kind of stuff before.
Mm-hmm.
Had a lot of fun. And let's see. I lived in Arizona for about a year and a half, maybe a little bit more. And then I was kind of sick of Phoenix. I just didn't like the town at all.
Sure.
It's kind of soulless place. So I said, okay, what's the next move? And it just clicked on me. I'm like, when I was in Warsaw, we toured out to Hawaii maybe about 8 times.
Mm-hmm.
And I told myself, I made this promise to myself, this postulate that said, I want to live out here, if only for a few years.
Right.
And then, I was doing the Arizona thing, and then I was like, okay, I'm getting burned out. And then, man, I heard 4 months ago that my good friends from Go Jimmy Go from Hawaii,
mm-hmm.
their bass player was quitting. Now, this guy, his name is Cameron Wright. He's a legendary bass player, in
yeah.
my opinion, one of the best bass players that Scott ever had.
Mm.
He's just right next to Hepcat. Dave Fuentes and
yeah,
Hepcat,
yeah.
Is right next to him. Just soulful, great lines, had plenty of Motown in them too, and
mm-hmm.
and the original ska roots kind of thing. Amazing. So I heard he was getting out, and so I called over to Hawaii. I talked to Sean Gregory, who was the drummer and the leader.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, what's up, man? I heard you need a bass player. Now, these guys know me. They know my work ethic. you know, and they know me as a good straight ahead guy, you know, like if I say something, I mean it, you know, and I'm going to be there, you know, and that means a lot, especially musicians are notoriously flaky people.
Yes, that goes a long way in a band that wants to be serious.
Totally.
But someone who's got their shit together and whose word means something.
I mean, they could have hired any number of like local Hawaiian guys, but they chose some Howley from Minnesota. You know? So I said, they said, yeah, of course, man, we'd love to have you on bass. Why don't you pack your bags and move to Hawaii? And I was like stoked because I hit two dreams at the same time. I always wanted to live in Hawaii for a couple of years, and these guys toured internationally. Now, I've toured all around America for a lot of years. Now, I've played almost every city many, many times.
Right.
In, you know, doing the Three Minute Hero thing. I did 800 gigs in Three Minute Hero, about 1,000 in Warsaw. So I was ready, you know, let's do some international. So I moved out to Hawaii. We start playing some shows. I'm fitting in really well. We put out a Christmas album almost as soon as I got there.
Yeah.
In the summer, we recorded a Christmas album. It was sponsored by Ska in the World, which is a Japanese record label.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they gave us $2,000 to put the album together, and we spent it all. And we recorded it, and it sounded great. And then they pushed it, and we sold a bunch of copies in Japan and sold copies everywhere else that we sell copies.
Yeah.
And had fun with that, and then it wasn't long after that, maybe the next spring after that, we went to tour Europe, and we hit maybe 4 or 5 countries, played, I don't know, 20 dates, had an awesome time, drinking beer in Germany, and
that's
the whole thing.
Like, that's also a dream I have, you know, being a musician. It's like, everyone that I talk to that goes and tours Europe, they always come back with tons of stories. They love it. Like, the experience was awesome and stuff. So it's always like, God, one of these days, you know, if I can make it happen, I'm gonna make it happen.
You just gotta make it happen, man. Yeah. You know, you'll go in the hole.
Right.
Just put that out there. you're gonna go in the hole. And
no, but you gotta look at it, the experience. As a, you know, like that has value to it.
Would you rather backpack or play music in front of people out there? I'd rather play music in front of people. We played this large, huge ska show, one of the biggest in the world. It's called Rude Cat.
Nice.
And it's based off of Girona, Spain. It's right outside of Barcelona.
Mm.
Now, it was a huge place, and it had about 2,500 skinheads, rudies, Chelseas, ska kids.
Nice.
We played with, what's that New York band, the big one?
Toasters, Slackers.
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 Played with Slackers. We played with Moon. God, Moonrakers. What's that band? They're all from Belgium. The Coral Origins.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, God, I can't remember some of the other ones. They had Doreen Schaefer came up.
Oh, cool.
I mean, it was huge, huge ska show, like the biggest I've ever seen, and in another country, you know. So you've seen all these Chelseas out there, some true skinheads and the true rude boys, you know, and everybody. I'm not saying a couple like just preppy dudes that had their collars popped. I'm talking every guy had their Fred Perry's or Ben Sherman's. They had their boots. They had their bracers.
they take that stuff seriously out there, and
it's big time.
Yeah, it's funny because like we've just recently I played a bunch of dates in like the Midwest, like down in Iowa and Wisconsin and stuff, and like there are small pockets of like that sort of skinhead culture. Like the people are out there, you know, dressed to the nines with all of their like Fred Perry gear and all that stuff, and it's like it's cool, but it's not on that sort of scale. It's like so it's so small and localized, whereas that sounds like that times like 100.
Oh,
you know?
It was huge. We got on a plane. We played Madrid the day before. Our first gig in Europe was in Madrid, and it was an amazing show. Go Jimmy Go's first album was huge all over the world, and people still remember it. So anytime we were playing any songs from the first album, everybody in this club were singing along. We packed out this small club, maybe with 200 people, just packed. And they were singing along. We'd back off the mic. They sang all our harmonies. We're like, we're in Spain. We never played here before, but they all know these songs, and it was just amazing. So we got on a flight from Madrid to Barcelona, or Girona. That's where we're playing. Every person on that plane was going for that ska show. It was a ska plane.
That's crazy.
So we got there. We had all our gear. People were helping us. Like, you know, you can only bring one item on. So like,
sure.
I'll carry the records. I'll carry the bass drum. I'll carry your guitar. You know, and then you take the chords. Everybody on the plane basically took pieces of our gear. And it was like ska plane. Like, I got aboard, and I was like, ska plane. And the people were like, yeah. People were freaking out. You know, it was unruly plane. And I couldn't get people to sit down. It was a party. I never seen anything like it. You know, that's just some of those stories.
Yeah, that's not gonna fly over here in the States.
No. You got to sit down. They're going to land that plane.
Yeah.
And the TSA is going to throw you, cuff you and stuff you.
U.S. Air Marshal is going to take you into custody. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, Europe was a lot of fun. I believe the next summer we recorded another album. It was Go Jimmy Go. It was a self-titled Go Jimmy Go, and it would be their fourth album. And then that spring we toured Japan and China. Now we got to go to Japan and hang out with our buddies from Ska in the World, and we did 5 dates in Japan and had a ton of fun. They showed us all around, great hospitality, unbelievable hospitality, and we played with a great, great ska band from Japan called Oi Skull Mates. If you ever got around to check him out, you check him out. He sings in English, but you'll never know it.
They're just aping the sounds that are made by the words.
Yeah, it's almost too comical.
Yeah.
You know, he says he's speaking English, but he could have fooled me. And after that, we flew to Hong Kong. We had some friends from Hawaii that lived out there.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to host us. So we played a gig in Hong Kong. And then we got aboard the train and went into inland China. Now, China has only been accepting Western bands for the last 4 years.
Yeah.
And I don't think any ska band has ever ventured in there before us. So,
and blazing a trail.
Blazing a trail. And there was no Hawaiian bands that's been in there.
Hmm.
Now, which is interesting for me because I'm representing Hawaii now as a Minnesota kid, but I'm playing in a Hawaii
right.
band. And I was very proud to do it because Hawaii is a beautiful state, beautiful culture.
Right.
Gorgeous, gorgeous paradise. Mm-hmm. And I still love it. You know, it's a part of me now, which is really cool. So we go into China and we're playing Guangzhou, Shenzhen, and we're deep into China. Like, we're on the bullet train going through and it's just rice paddies and dirty air and cities without street signs. And it's, you know, unbelievable. We get to these cities, we pull into one club, and they're a little bit more Western thinking, which was kind of fun, a little bit more comfortable.
Sure.
Like maybe the bar owners wanted to hang out with some Westerners.
Sure.
So they treat us to this big dinner at a restaurant. We'd have this huge room with our big table with the big spinning thing in the middle, and they'd serve food and unbelievable hospitality. And what struck me most about playing there, we'd play a show and people would just be entranced, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, we'll play the second set, and then they're finally like, okay, we got to do something. We got to dance. And they're kind of breaking out of their communist shell. You know, they're like, I'm just going to lose it.
Like the kids in Footloose or something.
Exactly. They're like, finally. And then they're like, what are my feet doing? You know?
Yeah.
But what I noticed, there was like maybe 2 or 3 girls off to the side, and they were losing it like a Beatles girl fan. Like you see when they're screaming and they're pulling their hair. These girls were doing that. And I'm like, I've never had anybody, you know, in any band I've ever been. You know, you got to think back in the Beatles, those girls have never heard anything like the Beatles when they heard it.
Right, right.
And not to compare ourselves with the Beatles, but like something on the fact that these girls have never heard any kind of reggae-influenced ska music with horns and a soulful singer doing his little soulful dance moves, and we have great, tight music, and she's probably never heard any of this ever in her life. And
it's a conservative culture, so it's like it's tough. I mean, they don't get that exposure.
They have limited internet, the whole thing. You know, they've never heard anything like this. And so them losing it like that, I was like, yeah, that is so cool. You know, she's never heard anything like this, and we're legendary in her mind now.
Right, right.
And we brought some kind of music to a whole new culture, to a whole populace that's never heard ska.
I think that's really, really cool. For whatever reason, I was just thinking, like, when you were describing some of that, like, when you were saying you're playing the first set and, like, nobody really knew what to do, it reminds me of, like, that scene from Back to the Future where it's like, oh, you guys aren't ready for this yet. You know, like, this Chuck Berry tune. But and the other thing, when you're talking about these girls that are just going berserk and losing their minds, I just was remembering the very first time I ever watched like a modern day star do that. I think I was watching some like Michael Jackson concert, and it was somewhere in Asia. It might have been Russia or something. But there, like, I just remember all the girls in the front. Yeah, everyone is just crying because they're like, "Oh my God, I'm in the presence of Michael Jackson." I was sitting there going, "Wow, does Michael Jackson feel weird that there's these girls crying, or is he getting off on this, or like how is like I mean this got to if I was in that situation I'd be like, wait, no, it's all good, you don't need to cry, I'm just making some music.
I wouldn't doubt that it transcends even beyond it. I believe that he believes in himself that much.
Yeah,
like any good artist should.
Right,
unbelievably believes in what they're doing. And these people believe in what he's doing too, so
right.
They're
it's
all
like that,
caught
yeah.
up. So he's not even thinking as a personal thing. He's not going inward on it. He's
right.
like over his head. Like this is something powerful. This is like spiritual, you know.
Yeah.
Up in this band up here.
Yeah.
And everybody's on that band. Like a good artist will just cast that kind of spell.
Prince did that. I remember when I went to a Prince show, he was a lot like that too. Mm-hmm. It was like he knows he's the shit. And he knows he's up above, and he believes like 110% in whatever the hell he's doing.
Yep.
And everyone else is just like in awe. And he knows it, but he just believes in it.
Yeah.
He played in town like, I don't know, 3 years ago or so. And I'd never seen Prince play live because he hardly ever does nowadays. But like I just remember I didn't realize he was such a good guitar player.
Oh yeah, he rips.
Yeah, he's just amazing. So it's like, wow, okay. And then all of a sudden he calls down to his guitar tech and goes, you know, toss me up the whatever. And like all of a sudden this bass guitar comes flying from below the stage and he catches it. And he just starts just jamming on this bass. And it was just this like minute and a half, 2.5 minute, like sort of like just solo jam session where it was just him and the bass. And it was just, like, crazy. And then he just stops. And then he takes it off, and he tosses it back down. He's like, I just wanted to see if it worked. And I'm like, and then the crowd just goes, ah! It just goes crazy. I'm like, who is this guy?
Oh, yeah. He's a magical little fella.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, that was the night where he played, like, in Macy's. He started at Macy's at, like, 6 o'clock at night. And then he went over to the Target Center, and he played like a 3-hour set there. And then he went over to First Ave, and they played until 4 in the morning. And then the cops had to shut it down because they're like, we have to shut it down. It's against the law. Like, you know, otherwise he would have continued to keep playing.
Right.
He would have played for 12 hours straight.
You can't stop that guy.
No.
He's unbelievable. I'm so proud of that he's a Minnesotan, too, you know.
Yeah.
You know, when people are like, oh, Minnesota. Oh, yeah. What, do you guys have cows? No, we got Prince.
Yeah. Fucking Purple Rain.
We got Prince and Kirby Puckett.
Yeah, that's right.
Recognize.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, well, anyways, Go Jimmy Go, great band, unbelievable band. You know, they really took that soul ska to, you know, the limit. Kind of, you know, they're on the Hepcat line and
yeah.
that kind of thing. And it was really quite fun. These guys are sweethearts, the best sweetheart band I've ever played with. Everybody's super nice.
Mm-hmm.
They were big enough that we thought big, you know, like
you could dream big.
We could dream big with this band. We're like, okay, we're going to put this album out and then we're going to go tour the world. And that's what we do. And it was awesome, you know, and their ducks were in a row. You know, we had a couple brief patches with like getting almost signed. You know, we had Tim Armstrong was like looking at our album for a while.
Right.
He signed us to his Machete, which is his, merchandise line.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of cool. I'm like, that's a pretty big deal to get on Machete.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, made a bunch of videos in Europe and in Japan and a little bit of exposure in the States, but mm-hmm. bigger, more internationally than we were in the mainland, which was fine.
Yeah. I mean, how does that make you feel as a musician where it's like you're from the States, but you're bigger elsewhere?
That's the funny thing. When you live in Hawaii, you know you're a United States citizen. But you don't really think it.
I suppose you wouldn't. Yeah,
you're living in so far removed, man. You're so west, you're east.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, it's the most removed landmass from anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most remote place in the world. Land is, even the next island is like 1,300 miles away.
Right.
You know, it's just, it's incredibly way out there. Mm. So it kind of allowed us to like be our own thing, you know, like even going to Europe, you know, it's like you could say, oh, yeah, I'm in this Minnesota band. Mm. And they're like, oh, okay, whatever. But you say, oh, I'm in Hawaii. People are like, oh, Hawaii. So it was like this extra currency of like.
Sure.
People are like, oh, I'll go see you. You're from Hawaii. It's like, oh, cool. You know, I can attach the Hawaiian thing to your name. Mm-hmm. And it just made it, I don't know, legit on a worldly level, because people don't really even associate Hawaii with America, even if they hated Americans, you know. You know, even going to Europe, you know, being there, and there would be one drunk guy in a corner that capitalist pig.
Yeah.
You just have to deal with some guy that hates capitalism, and you're like, okay, you know.
To be honest, when I think Hawaiian, I just think of a, you know, big Samoan guy with a ukulele, you know.
Right.
They just chilling on the beach somewhere. That that doesn't sound like the Midwest.
No, it doesn't. It's like, it's a whole other thing. And, you know, I think people kind of recognize that, you know, and it kind of came across in the music, too. If you listen to some good Go Jimmy Go, you can feel the backbeat of Hawaii, some real relaxed rhythms going on there.
Yeah, it's a lot more like island sort of feel to it. I mean, it did have, obviously, like, they have the soul voice, but, like, it's not like, you know, like, Slackers have the soul voice and the Aggrolites have a soul voice, but, like, Slackers are distinctly East Coast and Aggrolites are distinctly California, L.A., and Go Jimmy Go is distinctively, like, this kind of this island sort of paradise feel to it. I mean, it just kind of seeps into the music.
I felt real lucky to play in that band.
Yeah.
Really lucky. I placed those guys for many years in the top five best ska bands in the world.
Yeah.
You know, they had some songs that everybody in the world, everybody that was a ska fan knew in the world.
Right.
That's huge.
I was a gigantic fan. I used to listen to Girl with the Fishbowl Eyes album like all the time,
because
it's just
album.
Like there's just so many good songs on there. It was kind of a nice little go-to album, and even if like people I knew that hung out like didn't care for ska or whatever, I could throw that album on and it wouldn't matter, because it's such a good, it's got such a good vibe to it that anyone can latch on.
For sure.
Yeah.
I learned a lot of good things in that band, like how to play slow.
That's important.
It's important. I mean, and a lot of, you know, Three Minute Heroes, very fast. Even our slow songs were fast. And in Warsaw, we didn't really play slow. We played punk rock. We played some kind of real groovy two-tone and some, you know, original ska. But we never really got to some rock steady.
Yeah.
And Go Jimmy Go would be on that fringe of early ska and rock steady. And which was so much fun to play, and you just really learn how to take a breath as a bass player and play behind the beat.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, because you're not so focused on, I need to be playing fast, I need to be hitting these notes, I need to be doing this, and you can take that kind of that breath. I mean, do you enjoy that? Did it change your taste for ska music? Were you saying, oh, wow, like, I mean, personally, I'm playing in the Prize Fighters now, and I used to play in Sajak, which was a ska punk band. We played about as fast as we could possibly play. And I remember as a horn player, I was just like, I need to hit every single note, and I am like constantly playing, and I need to, like, you know, you weren't worrying about like style, intonation, whatever. You're just like, I need to be fast, loud, and need to be keep playing. And when I joined the Prize Fighters, we were playing traditional ska, we're playing rock steady music, we're playing, like, you know, early reggae, we're, you know, doing all this different stuff, and it's like, wow, I'm not even playing on every song, and B, this is, I like it. It was a change, but it was like, I can actually focus on what the hell I am when I'm playing. Like,
yeah, it's like a big difference, huh?
It's not raw energy anymore, it's just, you know, you can put some emphasis and you can tailor it back and put it forward, so like
make that tone sweet.
Yeah. So I mean, did you experience that sort of thing when you had to change gears and play with these, with Go Jimmy Go?
Definitely. You know, hanging out with Sean Gregory, he was the drummer. He's an excellent ska drummer, excellent rock steady drummer, and had a ton of Hawaiian feel in him. You know, part Hawaiian himself.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he was just like, hey man, just relax, just put it behind that beat. And I'm just like, instead of just like playing, doom doom doom. You know, now it's just like I'm feeling ever so slightly behind the beat, so a tempo could be here, but just having the bass behind the beat could make the song even feel more relaxed and slower than it is. And it's kind of the magic of the bass of moving on top of the beat, ahead of the beat, or behind the beat to really cement a certain feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes people are like, oh, bass is bass, but bass became a whole nother animal for me when I joined that band. I really started studying traditional ska, studying those bass players, listening to a lot of Hepcat because he really kind of embodied that traditional ska.
Mm-hmm.
And really relaxed and try to really embody the whole island feel. You know, Jamaican being an island also. Kind of
right.
Like, we have that in common with that in Hawaii. Started playing more songs this way, and I fell into it, and I really started to understand it. Now, like, you know, especially in the 3 minute hero days, it's like I was a cocky guitar player. I wanted to be out front and like people touch my legs while I play guitar, you know. And to where I was a bass player in Warsaw, where I still had a little bit of that cockiness, but I felt like, okay, I'm the anchor, you know. I want to be seen, but I'm still rocking it. I'm cornerstoning this band. To now where I'm closing my eyes and I'm in the bass zone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just listening to that beat. I'm feeling my hands on the frets, like I'm in present time with this bass, you know. Like the whole world could be just like swimming around me. I don't care. The bass.
Right.
You know, like what's going through your mind? Bass, bass, bass. And that's all I'm thinking. Bass, bass. And it was amazing. I just became in this bass zone and I really became a bass player in my opinion. And it felt good that I was there. You know,
you didn't feel like a stranger in a strange land.
I didn't feel
anymore.
Like a guitar player trying to play bass anymore. I felt like a legitimate bass player.
That's cool.
Yeah, and then by this time, I probably have like 1,300 gigs behind me playing bass. So I'm like, okay, I'm more of a bass player now than I'm a guitar player. And I feel that way now, even though back in 3 minute hero, I'm playing guitar again, which is fun.
Yeah.
I'd rather play bass. But, you know, getting the guitar back on is a lot of fun.
Yeah, so, I mean, getting back, so you somehow came back to Minnesota for some reason. you left paradise
right. And
came back to the frozen land of Minnesota. What brought you back?
Okay, I'll tell you. Even when I left Minnesota, which was about 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
2000, I knew I was going to come back. You know, I knew I was a Minnesota kid, but I wanted to see the world. I wanted to get out there and experience other cultures, live in a different place. Tour my ass off.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did. I learned a lot from Warsaw. I learned how to be a strong player. I learned like how to take your dream to the ninth degree, no matter what everybody else's dream was.
Mm-hmm.
You got a strong dream, you go for it.
Sure.
Ooh, yeah. I got a lot of experience. Like if a club owner is giving you a hard time, don't just wimp out.
Right.
Take them out back and maybe beat them up. Do what you got to do, but you got to make your money. You're trying to like live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're barely making any money, and you got to pay gas, and you got to pay for new tires, and you got to pay for the next transmission that's going to break.
Right.
So
exactly. So, those things are ticking time bombs. Those
vans. Oh my god! Yeah. I went through 3 transmissions and 2 engines in my time touring with those guys.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot. You know, endless tours to New York and back, and New York and back, and then here and back, and wherever else.
Right.
Ridiculous. I felt like more of a truck driver than a rock star, you know, because I drive 8 hours and I get out and I'd be all tired and I sit up for a show and rock a show hard, sleep for 4, drive for 8,
rock
a show, sleep for 4 for 2 months, 3 months at a time, and then maybe get a week off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, do it again. So I gained a lot of balls and a lot of integrity doing the Warsaw thing. Go Jimmy Go, I just had the pleasure of living next to a great beach, swimming with turtles, surfing, you know, doing beautiful things.
Yeah.
And really soaking up the Hawaiian culture and, you know, being in that band and Go Jimmy Go, I arrived as a rock star. You know, even like some local, like Samoan dudes, I'd be cleaning a fish tank as that's one of my side jobs. I was cleaning fish tanks. And they're like, ho, bro, who are you? And I'm like, oh, man, I'm Jader. I play with Go Jimmy Go. Oh, Go Jimmy Go. I love those guys. You know, we're talking about, like, the local yokel Hawaiian guy.
Right, right.
And even a guy off the street that, like, they know.
They'd have heard of you, yeah.
You know, instead of them beating me up because I'm a white dude, they're like, oh, you're cool because you're in Go Jimmy Go. I'm like, it's my passport. And I loved it. So I had a lot of fun doing that. But I think the defining moment was I was touring China.
Mm.
And I think it was in Hong Kong, and where I was on the, like, 50th floor of this really nice hotel, and I was overlooking China and the bay there, and there's Chinese ships going. And I just patted myself on the shoulder, and I said, I did it.
Yeah.
I did it. I'm some small-town farm boy from Minnesota that had this dream of touring the world and making music and touring internationally. Touring and recorded, so we recorded in China, too.
Oh, okay.
So I did it. I'm an international touring and recording artist. I'm like, okay, I did it. And then right from there, my priorities went click. They changed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like, I've
you'd played... reached the end of your vision quest.
Exactly. Yeah. I did it. Yeah. Now I wanted to do it more on my terms. I wanted to have my own band.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do other projects that are me instead of me playing for other people. Right. And I've done that route, and it was fun. But, you know, it was kind of like their vision, and I'm kind of like going along with their vision. Now I kind of this is my vision. And I've always wanted to be back in Minnesota. I moved back here. I got a fiance now, and I got a home. Minnesota, you can afford a home.
Yeah, you can.
It's beautiful. In Hawaii, the median price for a home is $650,000. So a down payment is $130,000, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, I can come here, I can get a house, and, you know, like, I'm 36 now, so I'm like, it's important to me to have, like, the home, and, you know, I've done the touring thing.
Right.
You know,
you got it out of your system.
I got it out of my system, yeah. And I'm like, I don't feel guilty now.
Well, yeah, because you're not saying, well, what could have been?
Yeah,
you know what happened.
I know. You know, and I'm happy to be here, and now here we go, round robin, right back to 3 Minute Hero.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we got together, and we started making plans. Now, the big vision of the band is we're back, okay? We've already established that with this interview.
Yes.
And we're going to have a show coming up on June 17th at Bunkers, 2011. You got to be there. It's a great show.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't seen 3 Minute Hero, it's ridiculous. If you've seen shows before, tell all your friends to come because you know it's going to be a good time.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to do this show, and we're going to be playing all the old stuff, basically. We got two new members we're training in. We're going to let them know this is what 3 Minute Hero is.
Right.
And we're going to blow their minds because they've never seen it before. They're like, oh, my God, seriously, this is the band I'm in? So we'll get them up to speed. And the next show we're going to have in September and October, we'll probably have a show at the Fine Line.
Mm-hmm.
And we're making an album of tunes that we had back in the 90s and late 90s that it was like the end of the era.
Sure.
Before we got the chance to record the next album.
Mm-hmm.
So we're flushing the catalog.
Yeah.
We're recording them right now, and they sound great because we're all a little bit older, and we have a little bit more musicianship, and the songs sound awesome. Mm-hmm. And they were awesome songs. So we have all these songs, or we have eight of them. We're going to have a CD release party, and basically if you get a ticket to the show, we'll give you a one-of-a-kind CD that we're going to put our own artwork on.
Oh,
and
cool.
Jeff's going to do his own artwork.
Yeah.
So basically that's all we're going to do. You come to that show, and you get the CD, and that's all we're going to release. So
nice.
If you want the CD, you come to the show, and after that, it's gone.
Right. So it's going to be one-of-a-kind, rare sort of thing. And if you are a 3 Minute Hero fan, it's a show you're not going to want to miss. Yeah.
Exactly. Something for the fans that have been with us for over 10 years.
Yeah. And it is crazy because, I got a job out in Roseville, and it's an office job, and you know I work with a team members, and they're a bit older than me, but you know I was talking about, you know, this show or that show, and this is back a couple years ago when we opened for you guys, and I had mentioned it in passing to, because I don't know what my coworkers are into, and odds are they don't care about ska music, and that's kind of the attitude I've kind of taken with me. Like, they probably don't care, but if they do care, whatever. And one of my teammates, Mike, was like, 3 Minute Hero? I love 3 Minute Hero. And I was like, really? I'm like, because I haven't played in like 10 years. And he goes, oh, yeah, no. I went to Moorhead, and we would go and see these guys all the time. Like, me and my wife, like, we met at a 3 Minute Hero show, and like, all this stuff is like, you know, like, went on and on. And it's like, wow. I mean, that's the type of thing. It's like I'm connecting with people that are like 3 Minute Hero fans, and it just seems so random, but like the influence, I mean, it just transcends it. I mean, it's all over the place.
It was so strong, yeah. Man.
And so he was pumped, and he wants to know more about what the future holds for 3 Minute Hero, because I think he wants to, at some point he wants to introduce he's got three kids now, and he's like,
sure.
This is fun music, and I think they'd be into it.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I'm hearing that from a lot of fans from your...
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, my kids love Mean Man from the Circus.
It's, yeah.
Like, oh, they love Tangerine, and it's like all these songs we recorded so many years ago, and now they got their kids into it. I'm like, this is so cool.
Mm-hmm.
This is great. sure, we'll have like maybe a kiddie show, like, you know, seven and up.
Sure.
Could come.
Yeah, yeah.
Why not, you know?
Yeah.
The kids are into it. Why not?
Exactly. Well, and it's fun music, and it's, I think it's always been a style of music. The ska in general has kind of appealed to
all ages.
Younger ages. But, like, yeah, I mean, like, that's the thing. Like, I think you were at, we played a show in the dead of winter at Cause up in Uptown.
How's that?
And, yeah, and there was people, you know, young and old. I mean, like, old. And, you know, like, it's people dig ska music. And I mean, it pleases me as a ska enthusiast, promoter, and musician. But, like, it's cool. Like, I get a good feeling. And I feel like having 3 Minute Hero come back to the cities right when things are starting to be kind of on an upswing.
I agree.
It seems like the right time, you know, that it's all kind of happening.
I agree.
Yeah.
I feel that upward swing of ska again. I think it's happening. I believe so. Remember when the Toasters came through?
Yeah.
The Toasters, they jammed that place out.
Yeah.
There's tons of people there, and he's like, something's happening in this town.
Yeah.
He even noticed this, you know. I know Bucket from, you know, he toured out to Hawaii, stayed at my house.
Mm-hmm.
I ran into him in Europe. So it was kind of fun. You know, he's an old crusty bastard.
Yeah, he is.
And, you know, and of course I come in and I'm like, where's your Geritol, old man? You know, he's like, oh, what's up, Jader? You know,
it's bust
like,
his chops.
Yeah. You know, he's that kind of guy. And you know, he played the show and he's just like, man, check out this crew. You know, it's like, something's happening in this town. And I'm like, I would love Minneapolis to be on the forefront of one of the next waves.
I think so, too. I really do. It's unfortunate because a lot of bands have kind of labeled this area as kind of, it's so far away from everything, so it's a tough tour spot because then it's like, where do you tour from there? And nobody wants to drive 7 hours back to Chicago, you know, that sort of thing. So it's like, it's a tough sell. But I think the crowds have kind of spoken for themselves. I mean, like, the bands that have come through have had really good time, had really good shows, had, you know, lots of people were showing up. And I think, you know, sooner or later, I mean, I think that's going to, it's going to start snowballing. And I feel like this year, more than most, we've had more people, more interest. I mean, at the shows, so that's been kind of cool.
Perfect.
It's cool. It's, so it's like you said, you guys making your comeback this summer, and then you know, this fall having a release, and it's like, yeah, I feel like the Voltron is starting to come back together. You know, and
I'll form the leg.
Yeah. So, but you guys are going to be back for good. So you guys are going to be gigging and stuff. Yeah.
This is it, man. We've been doing some great rehearsing. We got two new guys. We got a new bass player and a new keyboard player. Their both name is Dan. So we got the Dans, and they're wonderful musicians. They're going to be awesome. Everybody's really stoked. You know, everybody's kind of like settled in their lives. You know, we got a couple music teachers. Jeff is doing art, and mm-hmm. he's really geared. And Jonathan is doing, he has his own project, but he's, you know, geared up for Warsaw. And I got my, you know, got my country thing going on,
mm-hmm.
and I'm still, and I, you know, I'm super excited for 3 Minute Hero, and we're all excited. So now we're looking way beyond now. You know, like we've done our thing in the past as kids, and now we're a little bit older, and now let's make something memorable. Let's not just put out albums. Let's do something memorable. Now, we've always done stuff that was uncool.
Yeah.
And it worked.
Yeah.
Our first album was named Bingo. Bingo is not cool.
Yeah.
Our second album was called Everyday Ninjas, and this is way before ninjas, or right after ninjas were cool, like late 80s ninjas were cool,
mm-hmm.
and now we're talking about 10 years later, like, Everyday Ninjas, it's like,
right.
It was totally not cool, and we always made it work for us.
Mm-hmm.
So here's our new plan, and I'm laying it out here for the first time for public to hear. So after that show in fall, we're switching gears to the new era.
Okay.
3 Minute Hero. Kind of like, okay, this is the old era. We kind of brought it back, and here we are back.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're going to put out a double album conceptual like they did in the 70s.
Yeah.
Totally. Nobody does that. This is the day of the single. People don't even put out albums anymore. It's single. Oh, this is my new single.
Right.
Forget that. Double album. We're going to put it out in three phases. You know, maybe 6-7 songs every phase.
Mm-hmm.
So every half year we'll be putting out a different phase of 6-7 songs. And then at the very end, we're going to tie it all together to the double album.
Wow. That's ambitious.
Ambition.
Yeah.
And it's all about the journey of the hero.
I think it's fitting.
The mythical journey of the hero. We have Jeff kind of created in his own crazy frontman world, this three-minute hero, this superhero. Like,
yeah.
He's our three-minute hero. And we've all kind of like, we do prayers and bow our heads to the head, the three-minute
yes.
hero head. And in his artwork, he draws basically cartoons of this three-minute hero in certain scenes. And that's what our posters are, these beautiful,
right.
unbelievable artwork that he has.
Crazy, psychedelic, sort of like, I don't know. It reminds me of, it's cartoonish, but it's also like, I don't know, kind of edgy slash, yeah, like psychedelic. It's kind of sweet.
It's way funky.
Yeah.
The last poster he has is three-minute hero as like a minotaur, and he has, and his horse feet have roller skates on them, and he's taking, and he's beating up a garlic octopus, and he's got two chainsaws, and he's chopping off its tentacles. And it's like, wow, only from the mind of this guy, you know?
Right, yeah. It almost sounds like a Mad Lib gone wrong,
it's,
you know?
It's totally funky. So every song is going to be about the journey of the hero, and it's going to be an epic.
Nice.
That's going to be what's going to be heading, probably starting in the winter. I'm guessing maybe late winter we'll start with the release of the first 7 songs.
Cool.
And then we're going to have, we're going to get people into it. And like this is something bigger than just a show. This is the beginning of a big swath of integrity and artistry.
I like that. And you're right. It is bucking the trends, but you guys have kind of made your name in bucking the cool trends.
Every time.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's poetic. It's great. And I mean, for me, being a ska promoter in here, it's like I'm licking my chops. I can't wait to to be helping you guys out with shows and packing the house, because that's what you guys do best.
Oh yeah, I don't think we're gonna have any problem getting people to our shows, just like we have in the past. And there's gonna be a lot of new public out there that haven't seen us.
Yeah,
and they're not gonna know what hit them. Like I can't wait to unleash the show back on Minneapolis, because nobody's ever seen anything like this show.
Right.
There's nothing like this show.
Well, there certainly isn't. And I've seen, I don't know how many ska shows in my life. And it's like, no, I mean, and I've seen the Aquabats, and they're pretty out there.
Well,
you know,
freakish.
It's like, yeah. I mean, you guys are really over the top, but it's in a way that that everyone can enjoy and everyone can be entertained, no matter whether you're a young kid or you've been in the scene for 2 decades.
Three-Minute Hero is not even about us. You know, like when I say Three-Minute Hero, I don't even think like me.
Right.
I think of something bigger, something that's like this collective idea that just kind of it's its own thing going out there. I'm just glad to be a part of it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like I'm not Three-Minute Hero. I'm just like a supporter of it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just like on the bottom holding the idea up.
Sure.
That's how I kind of look at it. And I'm pretty much every guy in the band feels the same way. You know, nobody's really cocky like, yeah, this is my band. No, it's just like we have something bigger than just like a cocky attitude.
It's part of your guys's charm too. I mean, you can tell it, when you guys perform, every member is into it in a way where, how all the great sports teams, it's like, you think back to like when the Twins won the World Series, it's like everyone had played their part and no one was bigger than the team, sort of thing. And that pretty much sums up the three-minute hero in my mind.
I agree. I agree.
Jay, where did the time go here? I'm looking at the clock and I'm like, what? There's no way we've been sitting here for that long.
That was a good interview, my friend.
Yeah.
It was a very good interview.
I'd like to let my listeners know, coming up, it's been, there's some room in between our episodes, and it's because I've been busy. I've been doing many, many different projects and such. But I will be flying out to San Francisco. I believe it's the 13th through the 19th. Asian Man Records are having their 15-year anniversary. And so I'm hoping to talk to some of the bands out there, bands like Slapstick, Buck 09, Slow Gherkin, The Chinkies, who else is playing out there? I mean, Monkey, there are all these bands from the West Coast that are all these bands that put out basically all the tapes I used to listen to back in high school. And I get to see them perform live and reunite and ME330 and all those guys. And it's going to be a good time. So stay tuned for interviews from that show. And yeah, and make sure you get out Saturday, June 17th if you're in the Minneapolis area. Oh, it's a Friday. Sorry. I apologize. Friday, June 17th. I need a calendar. 3 Minute Hero with Blue Waffle at Bunkers. It's on Washington Avenue, right behind the Twins Stadium, basically. So go check out that show. And I've been Courtney Close for my guest, Jay Kalk, in 3 Minute Hero. And we're all saying skank on.
Skank on.
Some.